The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Joey Donnelly is here of Crofton Motors to answer your motoring questions. Hello, Joey.
Hello, how are you?
How busy is it at the moment?
Yeah, it's incredibly so. Yeah, a lot of the independent shops like ourselves are very, very busy. Yeah, it's a busy time of the year. It's busy all year round.
What takes up most of the time? Is it pre-NCT, post-NCT or just general?
Probably a mixture of all. We would be primarily a body shop in the insurance sector. So repairing crashes when you're claiming off your insurance, that would be a lot of our work. And then also on the mechanical sites, we have a full service centre then as well, repairing from regular maintenance, changing filters and brakes and tyres and NCT work. So a bit of everything.
Well, we have been asking for questions all morning and I have so many of them to get through. So I think the best thing to do is just let's just hit them now and we'll start. Right.
Let's
so
go.
This listener has been told that they need a new timing belt. And they say apparently, like everyone's always sus, aren't they?
I was a little bit on the defensive about the timing belt because it's a recommended part. It's always difficult to say, you know, when you're selling a timing belt, for want of a better expression. The manufacturers distribute repair manuals to say it should be done at 100,000 kilometres or 5 years or 200,000 kilometres or 10 years, depending on certain driving conditions. So it actually varies from every make and model, and vehicles run in very different ways these days. But there is manufacturer guidelines that tells you when to do. There is actually no real way of telling. There are some obvious telltales when a timing belt is very badly affected. But inspecting timing belts can be difficult. In a lot of makes and models, they're buried in the engine and you can't actually see them. So you can't inspect it to say you're grand for another 10,000 kilometres. And it's actually difficult as a mechanical shop to sell it, because you say to a customer, if you step outside these parameters, the timing belt may fail. They could drive for 10 years and the timing belt may not fail, but you have to kind of act in those.
So there's no way to answer that question, which is, can you please tell me how often genuinely they need to be changed? What you're doing is following what the car manufacturer has said.
Yes, and also then there's some local knowledge as well. So some manufacturers might recommend a 200,000 kilometre, 10-year interval. And in reality, in the real world, there's some early failures at 6 years and 80,000 kilometres. So what'll happen is that'll get fed back up the pipeline and the manufacturer all of a sudden will start recommending them at 5 years and 60,000 kilometres. So that real world information does go back up to the manufacturer and they'll often change them. But when they first come out, they'll have a recommended guideline of a particular amount of years.
Okay, now one about diesel. So if you're going in to fill up your diesel car, you'll have an option between regular diesel and diesel plus. And they want to know, do you recommend the diesel plus option?
Yeah, again, it's a conversation we have a lot. People ask the question, is it a gimmick? Is it a sell? Is it something that's just more expensive? And the reality is no. It's a heavy regulated industry. And if they're selling a plus or an advanced or a miles plus in all the different brands, because every petrol station has it these days, there is a difference. And the mix of additives they put in are more advanced. They run the car a little bit cleaner. They can increase your fuel mileage. Would it be something I'd be doing every time? No. I drive a diesel, and because I do relatively low mileage, for every second or third tank of diesel I fill, I would actually put the diesel plus in. So fuel regulation is changing, European regulation, in terms of our reach for it by 2030. They want to have 30% biofuels mixed in with the diesel. So they're trying to change the blends and mixes, and vehicles run differently depending on what sort of blend of diesel they get. So in this kind of reach to clean up the diesel market, a lot of the manufacturers or fuel stations are selling these plus products, and they are genuinely effective to a point. Would I be doing it every time I fill up my diesel? Possibly not.
Every couple of times though, you're
saying? Yeah, I think it's a good thing to do.
Okay, Brian is in Santry and he has a 03 Mini Cooper. It's all in great condition, but in recent months, if Brian doesn't drive it for a day or two, the battery dies. He's checked the lights, see if there's anything left on. Nothing seems to be a problem there. Is there any way that I can find out what's draining the battery?
Absolutely. There's loads of ways. So he could be, hopefully he's engaged with a good mechanic who looks after the maintenance of his car. Vehicle electronics is almost a trade and an industry in itself. So there's auto electricians who just specialise in just wiring electricians. What he's potentially got there is what's called a parasitic draw. So you leave the car overnight and something is sucking a little bit of life out of the battery. He could also just have a pretty bad battery or a weak battery that can also be tested as well. So a little bit of context there. If the battery is more than 3 to 5 years old, anything more than 3 to 5 years old in a battery.
That's 23 years old.
Yeah, but it might have had three batteries since. Yeah. But the battery itself, if it's more than 3 to 5 years old, he's in bonus territory. It could be due for change anyway. But engage with your good local independent or your dealership or whoever looks after your car, or an auto electrician can check it for a parasitic
draw. So what will they do? Hook it up to a machine and be able to see sort of straight away?
It's an old school technology. You're checking the voltage coming out of the battery, and what you do is you load test it. So you put the battery under test, you put it under a bit of stress, and if it fails the test and it goes weak and it starts to fail under the test, it might be a bad cell in the battery and the battery is required replacement.
Okay. electric cars, is it completely changing your industry now? Because is that a totally different set of qualifications that you need to be able to fix them?
Yeah, the landscape is changing a lot. I mean, look, the engine or the plant inside a vehicle has been changing and iterating for years between the internal combustion engine, diesels, petrols, hybrids. It's now obviously a bigger push for electric. The electric vehicles are really washing into the market now. So we're seeing a lot more of them in the independent aftermarket. The dealerships have been dealing with them for a good while as well. It's not entirely new technology. Brakes remain the same, suspension remains the same, tyres remain the same. So the servicing and maintenance of the car still requires to be done at the same intervals, yearly inspecting your car and looking after it. The plants are a little bit different, so the work is becoming a little bit more specific. The industry is adapting to that change, like we adapted to the diesel market when it became a little bit more mainstream. We're adapting and changing to it. So the older the technology gets, the better we are at fixing it and repairing it and, you know, being able to repair it in a more sustainable way. So in terms of crash and general maintenance, it hasn't changed much, but we have to adapt. But we would always be adapting as an industry anyway.
Here's a great question, and one that everybody tends to ask when the NCT is coming. Should you get the car checked before it, or should you wait till afterwards?
the million dollar question. Yeah. And a reminder, and I put a big asterisk here, the NCT is nothing to do with the service or maintenance of your vehicle. An NCT is a safety picture of your vehicle at a particular time. It is really imperative that I always encourage all of my customers to be engaged in the maintenance and the looking after of your vehicle from day to day and year to year.
But they won't. And they'll go, and some people will just say, well, I let it fail the NCT and then I get it sorted out. It happens all the time.
And I'll be honest, sometimes there is a car that mightn't have been within us for a couple of years and they ring us up and say, oh, I'm going to get a service now and it's going to cure everything for the NCT. And I'll say, look, you've waited 3 years at this stage and you haven't bothered your backside doing something with the car now. Fire through the test. And if there's three or four items on it that we have to do, we'll do them. And also we'll check your car for its safety. And we may recommend other stuff to be done as well. So it really depends on where the customer is at, how good a customer they are, and how engaged they are with the maintenance of their own vehicle, which, as I always say, I put a big caveat and I say, you should be engaged in the maintenance of your vehicle. You're driving a 2.5 ton vehicle under your backside. You need to make sure that you're looking after it yourself and you're engaged in what am I driving, what am I doing, how safe is it to be on the road.
This listener is planning on privately selling their car and they want to know, should they get the full works done on it before they sell it, or is that unnecessary? That's another one now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit, again, and these are questions we would get all the time, and context is important. If it's an old car and there's a few dings around it and the car is worth, let's say, 10 grand, it's an easy figure to plus or minus. If there's, the whole side of it is scraped, they might have to spend 3,000 or 4,000 euros in repairing and painting and putting doors on it. Are they going to get that back out in the resale value? Probably not. So that's probably a poor investment. They're better off taking 500 quid off the sale price and, you know, selling it for a little bit less. It's often easier to lose money on paper than it is in reality. Pay it over. Pay someone to repair and fix up a car, spend 1,000 euros, and you may not get that back on the resale. So again, engaging with whoever you're buying or selling the car off. If you're selling it privately, the difficulty in selling private cars using one of the online websites, there's loads of them available out there, is that anything above a certain amount of money, it becomes a little bit more difficult to sell, because who would want to spend 15,000 euros on the side of the road and hand Claire Byrne with no sale guarantee, with no warranty, no anything? So selling a car on the side of the road becomes more and more difficult the more value there is in the vehicle. So again, preparing the vehicle as best as you can and giving the other person who you're selling it to as much confidence in what you're giving them is a way of getting as much value as possible.
Okay. Let's go to this one about charging the phone in the car. This listener wants to know, does it wear down the car battery at all? Sometimes this listener leaves it in on long journeys. Are they doing the right thing? Does it make any difference?
Short answer is no, it wouldn't really make a noticeable or a dot of a difference. In an electric vehicle, electric vehicles where you might have a 300 kilometre range battery, if you're driving in the summer and you're heading down doing a 250 kilometre journey, if you have your aircon and the radio and the CarPlay and the phone charged in, that will actually, and in EVs and electric vehicles, that can actually affect the long range performance of vehicle batteries, because the more electrical items you're using, the more drain on the battery. In a combustion engine where it's self-charging and it's always recharging, no is the short answer.
Okay. My son has a 2010 Ford Focus. When he starts the engine, he gets a strong smell of petrol. What could this be, says Brian?
It could be liable to get onto a tow truck and go onto a mechanic very quickly. I mean, anything with the smell of fuel, you just don't mess around with. So I can't answer that and say, I'll drive it on or do anything. If there's a smell of fuel and it is a genuine smell of fuel, I would say bring it straight to. As well, people's confusion over the smell of fuel versus the smell of fumes. If he's getting an exhaust or a smoky smell, if it's a Ford Focus and it's a diesel, they're prone to leaking injectors. The injector seats go in them, and they actually, a bit of kind of exhaust fumes get in the engine bay, and it can start to ingress into the cabin of the car. So it's a, open up all the windows, make sure you're not sitting in the car with the, all the windows closed, because again, when you're, any smells, fumes, carbon dioxide, they are quite dangerous. So my advice is
go to the garage. That's Brian, thanks for that question. And Joey, thanks so much for coming in, taking all of those questions. We've loads of them, so we'll talk to you again. We'll have to have you back. Joey Donnelly from Crofton Motors. We'll take a break.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.